Welcome to an episode of Capital Connection. We're glad to have you. As always, I am your host, Matt Calder, and hopefully after this show, you'll feel a little more connected to your capital. If you are a returning listener who maybe hasn't been here in a couple weeks, you're wondering why you're listening to Capital Connection and why you're not listening to What Matters in North Carolina. Of course, we changed over our name to Capital Connection to go in line with another product of our parent organization, the Civitas Institute, which is nccapitalconnection.com, which I also happen to write for. So it's just kind of bringing together the two things that I do under one roof, under one banner, which is Capital Connection. Glad we got that out of the way. In a couple more episodes, maybe I won't have to be mentioning, or maybe I don't have to mention it now, because maybe you're all already caught up and caught on to this. But until then, I'll kind of give it a quick mention at the beginning. Now, our segment for today is with Representative John Torbett. He's from Gaston County, and he will be talking about the House School Safety Committee meeting. We'll be talking with him about the House Select Committee on School Safety and sort of what happened in that two-part meeting that lasted the better part of the day this past Wednesday. So without any further ado, we'll get to our segment with Representative John Torbett. Representative Torbett, thanks for joining us back on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
So you're coming off yesterday. We know this show will go out over the weekend in the beginning of next week, but we're talking the day after the first meeting of the House Select Committee on School Safety. And you and Representative David Lewis chair this committee together, and it's a big committee, right? I mean, what's the membership of this committee? How many people?
I think we added another one yesterday. I think we're at 50 right now, which is just shy of the second committee. I think the only larger committee is the full appropriations committee.
Right. And I mean, that's a big issue that they're working around, breaking up the entire state budget. But so, I mean, I kind of want to touch on that. There was a question about why there's not a Senate involvement in this committee, and you answered it yesterday in the work session. Or the first session of the committee, that is just too large. There's just too many people involved on the House side right now for it to be a joint committee. I mean, this is, you know, 50 people on the committee out of the entire House is not an insignificant portion of the House by any means.
Correct.
And so yesterday, the meeting was broken up into two sessions about. The first session, just getting information to the legislators and also to the people, you know, viewing to the people in the committee who were there, to the stakeholders, but just getting that information out. And then the second session was more about kind of discussing around some of the things that were learned in the morning. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And then the general people's views and thoughts, because, you know, the committee's been formed for a couple of weeks, and I'm sure, just like all of us, that members of the committee had, you know, well, maybe if we did this, it would help, or maybe if we did that, it would help. So I spoke with Rep. Lewis, and he agreed, let's have the second part of the committee just open and hearing from the members of the committee about their ideas and thoughts. So.
Right, and I definitely want to get to those, but let's kind of start off with what, in the first session, in the informational session, what were the things that really jumped out to you? What were the things that you maybe thought you knew the case and it turned out to be a little different, or something just completely took you by surprise that you didn't foresee?
Well, one thing that, you know, with the terrible event that happened in Florida, you know, and that's just one of several over the last several years, is that our concern was, what were we doing for schools? And I was extremely pleased to hear the things that are going on that everybody just doesn't know or doesn't follow on day to day, as far as securing our schools and properties, that, you know, school administrators and LEAs across the state, without us having to say anything, that they are actively pursuing technological advancements in security and situational awareness and security on a day-to-day fashion. So I was very heartened to hear all the efforts that go into that are currently going on that I honestly didn't understand until yesterday. So,
Right, and that was sort of my takeaway from it in a way as well, is that from the way the speakers were talking, you could tell this wasn't something they started thinking about 3 weeks ago. This wasn't something that just came out of, you know, came onto their desk 3 weeks ago. This is something that has been going on for a while, has been in their mind for a while. The one that jumped out to me sort of was from the State Bureau of Investigation talking about how their responsibility, their niche in this overall plan of preparedness was on the prevention side, on getting to possible or would-be shooters before they would carry out that act. And I think that is an area that needs so much focus in all of this, and is frankly an area where the Federal Bureau of Investigation dropped the ball in Florida. I mean, there's a well documented now the missteps and mistakes that happened leading up to the Florida shooting, where it could have possibly been prevented, versus, you know, now, so the State Bureau of Investigation, our North Carolina, you know, Bureau is focusing on that aspect. And I think that is a really good place for them to focus.
I agree. And excuse me, I think what I was actually, by hearing all the things that are going on, the committee, we want to be there to add aid and assistance or enforce some of the technologies that are being, and just understand, are there any shortfalls or shortcomings? Is there anything we can do as elected positions in the state of North Carolina to support the safety and security of our people, which is job number one? Is there anything that we can step up and better aid and assist in that effort? And I think we also heard some of that yesterday. I'm real big on peer-to-peer. I think we need to look into programs that involve kids talking to other kids and helping and support and that type of thing. And then more perhaps in-school professionals such as child psychologist or something. Additional SROs, you know, we've all heard that. So there are some things that I think we legitimately need to look at and see, can we go ahead and get these implemented? If so, when? And if so, how? And that's some of the things we'll be doing in our breakouts or our subcommittee work, because the overall issue is so complex, we feel like we need to break into subcommittees or subcategories based off the big categories, such as facility safety, mental health, that type of thing.
Right, and that's the thing you're talking about, the additional school resource officers. And we saw in Maryland an attempted school shooting that happened, and the school resource officer stopped the shooting with no deaths. So, I mean, if that right there, and I don't think it's getting a whole lot of attention nationally in some areas. There's a couple national stories on it, but overall, I mean, it was kind of the nothing happened. Not that nothing happened, but a tragedy was averted and it's less focused on, but that is sort of a check mark for why the school resource officers are a valuable thing to have.
Right. Right. You're exactly right. And it's unfortunate, at least in my personal opinion, it's unfortunate that more often than not, the media will pretty much highlight and pinpoint the sheer tragedies in our day-to-day lives and not really highlight and pinpoint the wonderful positives that go on. So, you know, in a perfect world, I wish there was more of a balance there.
Right. And I'm thinking back on the presentation from the North Carolina Center for Safer Schools, which I believe was formed following Sandy Hook, if I'm correct.
That's correct. That was formed by an executive order from former Governor Pat McCrory back in 2013, and they have been collecting data, and we will, as yesterday, be receiving some of that collected data as they have been, you know, pretty much boots on the ground since 2013.
Right, and they're highlighting the need for the school resource officers. They're highlighting the need for the state agencies and other agencies to just work together to share this information. I mean, they're saying that there needs to be better communication between the students and the schools, opening up those lines of communication so people, adults, can know of these problems and possible problems. I mean, these are three things that you can point to very concretely that could have helped in the tragedy in Florida, honestly.
That's correct.
They had they had problems with their SROs that they did have. They weren't acting. So they were the wrong people for the job. But we've seen in Maryland that the right person for the job can be effective in that problem. We see that if there had been that collaboration among the agencies, if there had been good communication, maybe those warnings would have made it to the right people. If there had been, you know, a better way for the students who saw these problems to maybe go to their school personnel and then take that information to the right place, maybe something would have happened there. I mean, it's
correct.
They've highlighted a lot of.
But you remember being young in high school, and back in my day it was called junior high, but now it's middle school. That, you know, the person I'm most associated with wasn't the adult, wasn't the teacher. It was my peer. It was my friend, my buddy, my pal. And I think we need to work inside of that process also with adult, you know, supervision, of course, but to embolden that peer-to-peer communication. And I think you've seen some of that reaction as the terrible event happened in Florida with those students coming out and saying, you know, enough is enough. I think that in a positive way can do great improvements in the safety and security just from peer to peer, because that's who I listened to when I was in high school. And I assume that folks like in high school and middle school, they listen more to their peers than they do, you know, adults or moms and dads. Now, nobody messes with grandma or grandpa, I'll grant you that. But, you know, moms and dads, you know, I didn't listen a whole lot to my moms and dad until I turned to the age of a young adult. And I think that's just commonplace. So I really want to focus on the peer-to-peer, adding redundancy in SROs. You know, maybe we'll get down so they're in high schools there's two or more. Maybe in middle schools there's two. Elementary schools there's one. We don't know, but all this will be, you know, pretty much dissected as we move forward.
Right, and I definitely agree with that peer-to-peer. I mean, I think back and you know, high school wasn't too terribly long ago for me, but I was, you know, 10 years ago I was in high school, and I didn't care what the teachers had to say. I didn't care what the principals had to say so much as you care about what your peer group has to say and what they think. And,
right.
And I think the positive side of that is that if people are talking and there's a community and people recognize that there is a, you know, a downside meant to ostracizing certain people and to, you know, taking things too far. If people recognize that they're
right.
That they can, you know, be detrimental to mental health of their peers, that can be a positive thing or a negative thing depending on the awareness that people have. And I think that's one
right.
Small
I think that's
part.
Where we yeah, that's where we need the adults to jump in and cultivate that you're not in there you know, telling on someone, for example. You're in there providing help and assistance to get that individual some help and pull them out from whatever dark confines their minds may be in. So that's where I think the whole shift of that peer to peer with positive outcomes can reap great benefits.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think that the place where it has sort of been happening is on the suicide side, on the suicide mm-hmm. prevention side. It's become in more recent years more acceptable and normal to say, okay, it's okay to talk to an adult. You don't want to be a snitch. You don't want to be the rat, but when it comes to saving someone's life from themselves, you know, if you think someone's a suicide risk, it's become more normal to go ahead and go to a trusted adult, especially if it's a school psychologist or someone who can be a first line of defense against that. It's become more normal.
Right.
And if we can normalize that for these other situations, which I think a big part of that is getting a handle on who are the at-risk groups for carrying out these attacks. But if we
right.
if we can normalize that, we'll be taking a positive step, I think.
Right, and that number, suicide number, is way too large a number that we can aggressively go in there and change the some of the reasons. You know, we have to let these folks know that, you know, breaking up with a boyfriend or girlfriend is not a life-ending event. It's just part of life. We have to determine who's a bully, that type of thing, and get those people help. All that is, I don't mean to say it's easy, but it's easily detected, and that's something we just need to put additional effort on. So.
Right. And I mean, and I'm not so far removed that I remember that things seemed like a situation you could never get out of and would never be all right. Let's say you screw up a big project and your grade is down for that class. Worst case scenario, if you fail that class, you can do it again. I mean, it's not the end of your life. It's not, but in that moment, it really seems like it. And I just wish there, and maybe it's a wish, maybe there's a way to just give some perspective to these young people, these kids, to say, this isn't the worst thing that can happen. This is okay. This is very, very doable. I know it's a hard question because I've been on that side, but it's incredibly important to look for that way, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where I think your peer-to-peer can play the biggest role or at least have that biggest impact.
Oh, definitely. Your parent telling you things are going to be okay, even though they have the experience and age to know that's true, doesn't hold as much weight as your buddy saying, hey, it's all right, you'll be fine.
That's right.
It doesn't make sense, but it does make sense.
Yep.
So that's sort of the mental health side there. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
I was going to say
that's correct.
The mental health there. And I think that expanding mental health people in available to students would be an important thing. I mean, myself, my parents divorced when I was going from elementary to middle school was when my parents' divorce happened. And they had my brother and I go talk to a school psychologist who was available just as a precautionary, you know, there wasn't that there were behavior problems or there were these issues, but they wanted us to have a place to kind of work through and process that. And I, at the time, I didn't want to do it at first. I mean, of course, like there was a stigma. I didn't want to leave class and have all my buddies know I was leaving class for something. But in hindsight, it was a very positive thing. And I think expanding that would be as well a positive thing.
Right. You're exactly right.
So I'm glad that the conversation isn't just about keeping guns out of schools or maybe increased gun control. I'm glad that that's not where the conversation is wholly focused, even though I know a lot of
people
are
involved. We have to jump in front of the guns. And it's humans. That's the state of the mind. That's where we've got to try to, put our focus on, at least in my opinion.
Right, and that's the concern. I mean, I have people who know I'm dealing with this as a story and tracking it, and they're saying, are they focusing just on the guns, or is there, you know, good representation in the committee for the Second Amendment for people who are supportive of the Second Amendment? And that's the question I keep getting, is that people are worried that this is just going to end up being, how can we use gun control to affect change in this situation?
Right. I can say guns were not brought up for any of the meeting yesterday till the very end, when one of the members, I think Elmer Floyd, brought up the issue about teachers and guns. So it wasn't mentioned any during the day until the very end of the meeting. And to me, that was a blessing. That was a welcome response, because I do believe that guns, not the cure all. It's the mental state of the individuals. And if we can aid and assist them, help them as fellow citizens, as you know, fellow humans, if you would, then we can divert a lot of this, mental health and help hopefully correct the long-term issues.
And it, from what you're saying, it sounds like a lot of what you're saying boils down to just connection between people, and that lack of connection being a very large contributing factor to what has somebody turn to becoming a school shooter or carrying out some other sort of act of violence. I mean, whether it's violence against himself as a suicide or others, it's that lack of connection. So that's what you seem to keep circling back to.
That's correct.
And then,
we have to keep the lines of communication open as fellow humans, if you would. So.
And then, so I do want to touch on the issue of arming teachers. Where did that discussion sort of go once it was broached?
I think Representative Floyd brought up the fact that was there going to be any discussion, and I didn't hear anybody really come up with any additional comments. So that topic just kind of died and went away, and then the meeting was brought to a close.
Okay, and then I wanted to talk a little about the issue of the Speak Up NC app.
Uh-huh.
That seems like an interesting idea. So can you tell me a little more about that?
About the app?
Yes.
Yes, yes. It's actually, here once again, it's a communication device with an apparatus that most of us use on a day-to-day, being our smartphones. The first thing we'll have to do is make sure schools allow kids to have their smartphones. If not, the app doesn't do anybody any good. That's my biggest concern. And there are a lot of schools out there that don't provide access to your smartphone during the school process because it's currently a distraction. So we'll have to cross that bridge. But it's actually just providing a an app or a software development system where people can ping security or alert someone in authority that something's going on, whether it's someone talking about suicide, someone talking about using weapons, odd behavior, you know, anything along those lines. It's just a signal point for a kid to, for most cases, anonymously say something's going on. So it's a welcome piece of software, developmental tool, and it's being used throughout places in the United States. And I'm sure it's one, I call them gadgets or gizmos, if you would. I'm old school. But it's one of those gadgets that we'll be looking at as the community moves forward. Is that applicable to schools in North Carolina? Some schools, I think, are already using it. Some schools are already testing. And I do want to at least alert folks out there that, you know, schools are moving forward each and every day with securing our kids. So this isn't something that they're waiting for the General Assembly to do. They are actively and aggressively making sure that the kids in their confines are protected and are safe. So give them kudos each and every day. We're just going to be there to hopefully aid and assist.
Right, and I've got the statistics on the tip on the app in front of me from the meeting. And so yes, 42 schools are participating in 5 counties, and the statistics for 2015 to 2016, for that time period of a year, is 132 verified incidents were sent in to this line. There were 81 calls received to Speak Up NC from their suicide lifeline, and the largest group of what these incidents were about were bullying at 39%, and that's a big part of the framework for what goes into a shooter. So 5% of these incidents weapons related, but 39% were bullying, 25% were about danger, 24% are about drugs, and those three categories go into this you know issue that we're all trying to prevent.
So that's correct.
It seems like it's being utilized. And as far as the phone use in schools, I know that My mom is a teacher, and she's a technology teacher, and they're integrating even in the elementary school, they're integrating tablets and some phone use into lessons. And I know in high school, my stepsisters, they're using their phones in classes as a learning tool. And if this is happening in Johnston County, I got to expect it's happening in a bunch of other places in the state too. I don't
Correct.
Think of Johnson County as being on the leading edge of technology very often.
Unless you're in Johnson County.
Oh, and I am, and I love being in Johnson County. But
So I'm sure they're doing yeoman's work down there. So.
Oh yeah. And really, I mean, so I guess what still stands out to you that we haven't got to from the meeting? What kind of sticks out in your mind?
We didn't do a whole lot with security of facilities yesterday. I look at that probably coming up in a more distant future, future architectural designs of schools to provide more safety security. Now, that's not I want to again say that that is currently being looked at. But what are we learning as what are we learning from recent events that we might need to address in future architectural schematics of schools as we build out for the future? Like I've told everybody I've talked to about this, and which is hundreds of folks, is that, you know, my concern is that I know tomorrow if we had to, we could absolutely 100% secure every facility out there in every school. But do we want our schools to look like federal prisons or military installations? I don't think we do yet. So we need to take precautions we can from the facilities side to look at what can be done unobtrusive but still provide safety and security for our kids. And by the way, also I want to give a kudos out to there. We have received emails of thoughts and suggestions and ideas and concepts from literally, I would say it's up in the thousands now through emails and phone calls. And I appreciate each and every one of them. It's going to take all of us to solve this. And by hearing from people's emails and we're picking on that, and not one of them has gone unread, and all of those are being entered in and combined, if you would, to be topics for discussion inside of this committee. So thanks to all the folks out there.
Right. And that's definitely, I mean, it's great to see all that involvement coming from the outside. And touching on the securing schools, that one I see as being a really big problem to chew, because you have new school construction can be affected pretty well by this idea of centralizing the schools, keeping them it's down to one large building or as best as you can, and controlling access points. Those can be done. But then I think back about like the school I went to, Clayton High School, is a very old school. It has several disconnected buildings where you go in between, you know, to go to different classes, right, and go to outbuildings. And securing something like that, you can't secure the building itself because people had to move in between them freely. So you're limited in a way. You have to, you know, you would have to look at securing access points, which would lead to armed guards and that whole issue you're trying to avoid of having, you know, giant right. fences, concertina wire, and armed guards at every entrance. So you have right. to, in new construction, I see it as being an easier problem to work on. I think about the newer high schools in the county are much more centralized versus the one I went to. And it's just a bear of a problem.
Yes, sir, you're correct.
But it's good to know that there's, you know, 50 legislators and thousands of people in North Carolina looking at it and working the problem.
It is, and it's a welcome process. It's literally taking all. I'm getting letters and emails from. I'll go back to the gadgets and gizmos, for example, for technological applications to schools. There's a ton of that stuff coming in, and at some point in time, we'll probably start hearing from those people that want to test or trial or bring something forward that's worked somewhere else, that type of application. So, you know, we want to give everyone the opportunity out there. So,
all right. And thank you for coming on the show. I think we got to cut this segment off, but we definitely appreciate you coming back on the show.
Hey, you call me anytime. We'll try to keep you abreast of what's as we move forward. So thank you for the offer.
Sounds good. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Representative Torbert, for coming on the show and talking with us about the House Select Committee on School Safety and what's kind of going on there and what will be going on going forward with that committee. We also want to thank you, the listeners, for being here with us through this transition from What Matters in North Carolina, What Matters in C, to Capital Connection. And we really hope that through listening to these shows, you do feel more connected to your capital, more connected to what's going on in Raleigh, in your state government, whether it's at the state controller's office, from the treasurer's office, to the governor's mansion, the legislature. We want to make sure you are connected to what is going on in your government, and not just on the state level, but also on the federal level as it affects North Carolinians. Because all of this that we're doing here is about connecting North Carolinians to their government. But again, thank you for being with us through the transition to Capital Connection, and we'll catch you next time.